I'm opening this meeting of Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. It's March 11th. We have a public hearing on House Bill 5526, Agency Overview of the Oregon Health Authority. Ms. Ames.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, first the process today. I have a few comments and talk about the materials out on OLIS, the agency director and budget director, and then here to do an agency overview on OHA. And Daz will have a brief summary of the governor's budget at the end of that. Besides the documents for those three presentations, out on OLIS you'll also find what we've called the agency reference document. It's large. You'll see it's in two parts so that it will fit on OLIS. And it just has a lot more detail than they actually will have time to present in their PowerPoints. Within the next few days, the big governor's budget binder that has all the gory budget printouts out of the Orbitz budget system will be available, and that will be posted to today's date as well. So all your basic reference materials will stay on today's date if you want to refer back to them. The document called Senate Bill 5526 LFO presentation is a combination of short summaries of the budget and budget key budget issues for the agency as a whole, and then there's one for each of the major programs in the agency. And that's similar to what you've seen from LFO for other agencies, but it's a good way to get your arms around a few key issues, and each one has a chart of the budget numbers by fund type. The single biggest budget issue for the agency is the continuation of the hospital assessment. The statutory authority for that is in House Bill 2395, and I believe that's on the House floor this morning.
Don't screw it up.
So,
team,
are there general questions?
Yes.
Otherwise, we'll go on to the agency.
Sure. Let's start. Come on up.
Yeah, thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Lynn Saxton. I'm the director of the Oregon Health Authority, and our team is here today to give you the overview of the Oregon Health Authority budget. We're excited to be here. Bill Collum, who's when I came to OHA, I was told I was lucky because I had one of the best budget directors in the state of Oregon, and in my experience, that's absolutely true. In addition, he continuously smiles, which makes our work really fun. Not the usual demeanor of a finance guy. And Kate Nass, who I have worked with in the governor's office for the past 4 years on early learning financing. And so I was thrilled to have her join the OHA team before I did. So we're going to show you not only a budget overview, but we'll be talking today about a redirection and restructure for the Oregon Health Authority that we're very excited about.
Senator Bates.
Just as we get started, Lynn, I want to welcome you to this.
Thank you.
You've just been confirmed. This is an agency that has been looking for leadership for the last 18 months. I know you can supply that.
Thank you.
And we're excited to have you on board and welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. That said, I'm going to ask that all questions for the next 2 weeks be directed to Lynn. We want to embarrass her as much as we possibly can. Just get her started here in the right way.
Okay.
Lynn, seriously, thank you for taking on the job and welcome.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you here.
It's a privilege to be here, and I mean that sincerely. As you know, the Oregon Health Authority was created by House Bill 2009, and it is the single point of accountability for health service delivery and sustainable health care costs, as well as public health. Our goals are to ensure better health care, and lower costs, and our budget is $18.7 billion with 4,414 FTE positions. One of the things you'll be seeing, I think throughout our presentations to Ways and Means, is the results that our agency brings for Oregonians. I think this is really important. It's important certainly to talk about the programs and services that we oversee, but it's equally important to talk about the impact for Oregonians. I think I'm not going to read slides to you, but I do think these numbers are telling, and I would point your attention to the more than million Oregonians served today by coordinated care organizations. That's 25% of the state of Oregon. We think of that every day because it underscores the importance of us getting this right. As you can see, this is one of my favorite slides, and one of the things we focus on in the agency. Our vision is a healthy Oregon. Our mission is to help all Oregonians achieve optimum physical, dental, mental, and social well-being. I want to be clear that although we have stood up the CCOs and are on our way to achieving that mission, we have work to do in the integration of mental, physical, and dental health. Our work has just begun there. This is our 2015-2017 Oregon Health Authority organizational structure. One of the things that we have begun work on, we'll be announcing this week and then moving forward in the weeks ahead, is to ensure that our organizational structure and our FTE is scaled appropriately to the healthcare transformation that has occurred over the last 2 years. 95% of Oregonians now have health care coverage, and that's exciting to us. I was at an event last night with people from Jackson County, and we spent the evening doing a deep dive on enrollments for people in various small communities in Jackson County, and that was a great discussion. But overall, we're at 95% and making real progress in the last 3 weeks in particular on speeding up the enrollments of Oregon, the enrollment process and the online process for that. It's sobering for us to think, and this is reflected in much of the data that you're going to see in our Ways and Means presentations. Over half of Oregon's children now live below the federal poverty level. As a native Oregonian, I take that as a very serious indicator of our need to fulfill our mission successfully and our need to focus on prevention as well as ongoing health services. Leading causes of death in Oregon, tobacco still, we want to say tobacco still, obesity and substance abuse. One of the things that we like to direct people's attention to is the strategies that we are using to transform healthcare, because although we have stood up the CCOs, the mission is not just to have a different organizational structure, but to actually change how healthcare is delivered in the state. So what we have done, we've had a variety of strategies and a variety of results. I want to point your attention to the results attained to date. We have gains to be made in the future, but we're very excited that emergency department costs are down 21%. That's significant. We get a lot of attention from around the country on how Oregon was able to achieve that. I talked about the high level of coverage. We have a hospital incentive pool which aligns financial incentives with performance. We have a quality incentive pool for the CCOs, and we are currently bending the cost curve successfully. Now, that's something we benchmark to other states in the country. For example, we're doing much better than North Carolina. Tennessee is doing a little better than us. So part of what we're going to be continuing to watch is that we're delivering the quality care in a new integrated manner, but also that cost curve continues to come down, and that's a big challenge. We had much higher enrollment through the Affordable Care Act than we anticipated, but I think given that we both have the analytical capacity to look at that metric but also know what the levers are to make it happen, I think we are very focused on sustaining that gain. And of course that has tremendous implications for the state budget if we control those costs. This is just shows where PEB, OEB, and kind of where we would have been without health care reform, where we are with the progress we've made to date. That health care, the orange line, we are going to be doing some work in the next 6 months identifying the federal subsidies that go away over the next 5 years, the enrollment numbers we're showing, the age of the enrollees, and we will be ready to have a conversation with all stakeholders in healthcare about the projections for the future again so that we can keep an eye on what we need to do as some of the federal ground rules change to ensure Oregon's continuing success and financial sustainability. That's a big challenge. We're very focused on it. It takes very sophisticated analysis, but I think we're going to be pleased to have that information. This is our coordinated care model. I hope you're all familiar with it. The interplay of these various elements, best practices, paying for outcomes in health, sustainable rate of growth. This is really a very pretty picture of something that is really complex and requires all of these parts to be working well together to achieve our goal. And so far, we're doing that. I think we can all take pride in, as Oregonians, that we have created something different here that really delivers healthcare differently. And equally important to its future is we know what the various moving parts are and how they have to work together to deliver the result we are seeking. This is the map that I have on my wall, and I encourage people to have it on their wall because it's when we talk about coordinated care organizations, they are very specific regions of the state. And so we're happy to give you a larger version of this for your office in color if you like. It's a very important relationship that we have with the coordinated care organizations, and we're actually very excited to be making some gains. We've made some gains in clarity on our rate process in the last few weeks. We'll be making some gains in the next 2 weeks on restructuring our meeting format. But this is the partnership that makes this work. And we're rededicating ourselves both to that partnership, but also being sure that it's implemented and managed in a clear and efficient way. This is our budget. I think it's very important. The total fund program area is $18.8 billion. One of the things that we are looking at is, and you'll see this throughout our presentations, is we're looking at areas where the changes that have occurred with the stand-up of the CCOs can either result in redirected resources or repurposed resources or ideally in some areas reduced resources again so that we can continually produce that cost savings that we're committed to. I want to highlight this shared services agreement. You probably are all familiar with this, but we do operate on a shared services agreement with the Department of Human Services. It's a very small part of our budget, but it's part of the zone where we can, going forward, work on better customer experience of the social service system. I know a lot of people have asked me about the MMIS. A lot of people have asked me about the interplay between the software we're going to be using to enroll people in the future and how that's all going to work. Part of that is going to happen in that zone. Aaron Kelly Seal and I have already met to talk about how we can improve the experience for people in Oregon using these services. This is, again, another breakdown. You see a large percentage of federal funds here. We have to be careful, as all of you know, federal funds come with requirements. And one of the things I encourage you to ask as we go through our presentation is there are some relationships and some programs in Oregon where we do not have the flexibility to change them and hold on to certain levels of federal funding. So we pay a lot of attention to that.
Thank you very much. Just really quickly, Ms. Saxton, I don't expect you to know the answer now, but over time,
I, at least, and I think other members of the committee might be interested in hearing from you about which of those areas you would like us to help you in thinking about waivers or opportunities for innovative programs, just as we are functioning now under a Medicaid waiver or DHS has done with the K plan. So it would be helpful, I think, as you get more and more familiar, if you'd think about that with us. Oregon has a great track record with waivers.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is, again, just more detail. I'm not going to read slides to you, but I think the information is presented clearly. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer. I'd like to look at the next chart, which shows the governor's budget by program and category, and I think this is a very telling chart. We tried to move the axis to different levels so the ranges of the bars were not so disparate, but I think you can see the where the money goes, what it goes for. I think I would highlight, we're very excited, first, to have the health a relationship we have with the Public Employees Benefit Board. I think that is launched and successful and moving nicely forward. I think we also want to point out that special payments are the distributions made for health and health care to CCOs, to LHDs, and to mental health providers. And I also want to highlight the public health programs here. We've had a busy year in public health programs in Oregon already, with the meningitis outbreak that we've had in the state, and of course preparing ourselves for the implications of the preliminary national concerns around Ebola. So I think you will see in the future and in the presentations you're going to have over the next few days, you're going to get the detail on where those funds go. Obviously, the bulk of our funding is in medical assistance programs. One of the challenges that we have had is the alignment of medical assistance programs and the addictions and mental health budget with the CCOs. Things look different now. Delivery is different now. So we have on our work plan in the coming biennium the aggressive alignment of medical assistance programs and mental health programs with the CCO service delivery structure, and we're excited about that work. These are 2014 Oregon Health Plan highlights. We set out some benchmarks for ourselves when we started healthcare transformation, and I think we are meeting those benchmarks currently. We're excited about that. We expanded coverage in January to 380,000 people. We're at about, as of this week, 1,041,000 Oregonians enrolled. Again, I want to highlight that in making this transition, these health care costs for these populations are 100% federally funded, but we will be bringing forward in the future how those subsidies decline and how we adjust what we're doing to ensure that it moves forward smoothly.
Senator Bates.
This is for Bill, really. You're probably going to do this anyway, but we have three or four different groups of people, OHP plus, and the new enrollees, and I'd like to see what our percentage increase or decrease has been in those areas. I think the new group has come in younger and healthier than we expected, and that's probably skewing things in the right direction. Yeah. I'd like to see how our OHP plus group has done this, the groups we've always worked with, to see if the CCOs are really being effective in bringing costs down for them and improving quality. So if you could kind of break those into different groups later on, it probably will anyway, but I'm just going to ask you to do that.
Okay. Senator Bates, we do have a slide in the presentation, and our presentation for the medical assistance program will be going into greater detail.
I expect it would. Thank you.
That's all right. Here we go. This is.
I'm just trying to give you a little segue.
I know. Thank you for the introduction.
I didn't cheat. Look ahead, so I probably start cheating now.
I think when you look at this chart, I want to go back just a minute here. I think the progression, the level, the intensity of the progression is well demonstrated in the chart. I think one of the things some of you may have been hearing from your constituents is in the in the move to healthcare.gov and using that system and the complexities of that, this process was difficult for Oregonians, and we own that, and we have modified that. But the wait times in January were about 49 minutes for people trying to get their enrollment made over the phone. Those wait times are now down to a range of 3 to 7 minutes, depending on time of day. And we really focused on that and drove that down. But we do take responsibility for that delay at the outset. Part of what we have identified is our need to have have a really strong skill set and strong technology in that call center kind of operation going forward. We're not where we want to be yet. I want to make that clear. But we have made significant gains in the customer experience of the system, and we'll continue to do so.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
So this is a problem of 18 months. You took over as interim 5 or 6 weeks ago, and it went from anywhere from 2, 3, 4, or 5 hours to 7 or 8 minutes. Can I tell you tell us how you did that?
So,
Is there blood in the streets? I mean,
is there blood? One of the opportunities we have at the Oregon Health Authority is we have some very talented people. And part of what we needed to do was to direct their efforts in different ways. And part of what we needed to do is recognize that as a purchaser of services, technology services, etc., we need to be very aggressive with vendors in what they deliver to us. So part of what we did is we redirected and retrained our workforce. We set the bar higher for them, which initially was daunting and then became very exciting to them. And the other thing we did is we went out to our phone line people, and said, truly, you can do better than this. And truly, they could. And so I think we also set goals for ourselves in sharing that information weekly with the CCO so that everyone knew every step of the way what we were doing. The first week that we sent that information out, the staff said, do we really want to send this out because it doesn't look perfect? And we said, yes, we do, because everyone will know where we are. So I think what we wanted to do early on, or one of the things I hope to do early on, was get some successes under the belts of the team and use that to build a momentum for future successes. And at the end of the day, we have the internal leadership capacity to drive those kind of results as long as we're focused on those results and bring the pressure to all of our partners to deliver those results. So that's how we did it.
Impressive.
Thank you.
You mentioned something about a vendor.
Well,
could you say a little bit more about that?
So, and we'll go this far on technology, and then I'll be out of my range, but I can certainly get you more information. We have phone trunk lines into our call centers. We have three call centers. Those phone trunk lines were at capacity, which resulted in people calling in, getting bumped off, and it really was a bump off. You could be on hold for 49 minutes, and then you'd be bumped off. So we went to them.
So it wasn't just waiting to talk to someone. It was literally the access through a phone line.
Yes.
Was a problem.
Yes.
Oh.
So one of the things they can do is they can use computers to mold that traffic.
Yeah.
Linda Hammond, who is a very experienced state leader, led our change process here. And, you know, we had that conversation about, one, let's add additional trunk lines. And then, two, use your computers to bend the traffic.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. Yes.
Well, thank you. Awesome. Thank you. No, Chair, I just, you asked that question, Doc Bates. Lynn, I got to tell you, the way you just described his question, I got to say, you were describing actually the law of solid ground from the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership that John Maxwell wrote a few years back. So, good job.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a team effort. We're very proud of it, and we'll be looking for more of those exciting opportunities. This is an important slide because it shows you the change in the population groups in the Oregon Health Plan. And as you can see, the who is getting services and where the spending goes is very interesting. But as Senator Bates said, the new enrollments are younger than originally anticipated. Okay. 98% of our...
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Can we go back one slide?
Yep.
If that's okay with you?
Sure.
Thank you very much. I'm really interested in the pregnant women. Do we have... Because historically, women who were pregnant were categorically eligible for Medicaid if they didn't have other insurance and weren't, you know, were eligible by income criteria. Do we have a... Never mind. I'm tired and I misread the slide. I apologize, Ms. Saxton. Just stop what I forget me. I'm sorry.
I think the question might be, there's a jump here from 2 to 4%.
No, that's actually people and spending. So it's like they're 2% of the people. That's what I was thinking too. And then I thought, no, it's actually 2% of the people, but it's 4% of the spending. And it's because, as we should be, we're spending a lot of money to provide good prenatal care.
Right.
And I just wasn't interpreting the slide. But thank you, Senator Bates, for making me feel less worse.
I'm trying to help you out.
I appreciate it very much, and you did, because then I was able to articulate where I'd gone off track. So I apologize for disrupting the meeting.
I do want to use this opportunity to point out what you have developed, the resource that you have developed with your with our Oregon Health Plan, is we now can identify where we're having successes with pregnant women on prenatal services, and we can identify where we're lagging by using our metric system and the data set that we've begun to compile as a result of this effort. And that it should be exciting for two reasons. One is we're able to target populations that we have historically not served as well as we need to, so that's very exciting. And then also we can look at where those successes are and replicate them in other CCO areas. So it's that is money in the bank. I call it the jewel in the crown. The data we are developing is going to continue to make this system effective and efficient, and that's really exciting. We don't talk about it enough, but it's very important. Okay, 98% goes to direct provision of health services. That speaks for itself. The factors that influence our budget are, of course, the economy. Again, that glaring statistic of over half the children in Oregon living in poverty. I think of that every day. Social issues that we have to address, untreated mental health and substance abuse, homelessness, and then other disparities that exist. And finally, we can never forget that not only is there state policy driving healthcare transformation, but we have to be increasingly savvy about the federal policy and the interplay of that policy as it matures with what we're trying to accomplish in Oregon. And we've got a lot of focus on that, and we will continue to. This is the medical assistant program caseloads history and forecast. Happy to answer questions. I think it's...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Forecasting caseloads is always as much of an art as science. If I'm reading this correctly, with the improving economy, you're hoping for I'm trying to read this sideways here. You're hoping for a flattening of this in late 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Caseload drives a lot of this budget, and... Bill, I'd like to look at those numbers real carefully with you. We've got a budget to balance here. It's, you know, it's caseload, it's cost, and benefits. So that's an interesting supposition. And I know you're going to get some caseload numbers next couple weeks, and that'll make it more accurate. But I'm hoping that this is something that will fulfill itself, that we're not going to see a big jump in caseload. In this biennium, at least, and hopefully as the economy improves, people come off and go into commercial insurance.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, you're correct. We do have the caseloads that will be updated this month. We are preparing the costs in relation to per member per month on those. The caseload, as you see here with the blip, it is indicative of the ACA enrollment. If there's an actual increase in regard to the caseload, it'll be primarily driven by the ACA, but we'll have that rebalance material presented for you and your staff by the end of by the middle of April.
Follow up?
Sure.
Since the streamlining of enrollment, will that make our numbers a little more accurate, possibly, instead of having a big backlog?
My thinking is that it should, but I'm not sure that it does, because we're still early days in those enrollments. For example, one of the challenges we've faced that we learned and are working with our community partners on is people do not commonly understand that you have to re-enroll every year, you have to provide income data every year. So, for example, this year, part of our enrollment challenge was people reporting their income differently for some valid and some not very valid reasons. So we have an educational curve that's running along this caseload curve. So I don't expect it to be stable and kind of feel real solid for even another year.
I would just point out that really drives this budget a lot. People drop off of Medicaid, they don't realize they're off. They go to a provider, a doctor, or a hospital, and have to be re-enrolled, and we never know what's going to happen. And the normal rollover in this program is pretty high, somewhere around 20%, if I remember right. So you have people coming and going all the time anyway. It's more complex with the issues you've had. But those caseloads are a very important number here, and I will be watching that and working with you on it.
Senator Bates has referred to something that we've called churning in the past. Review for the committee what we've done to address the issue of churning. In addition to needing to understand it for a forecasting purpose, there were policy decisions made to address the churning and reduce the coming in and off benefits, whether it's health or even other human service benefits. So is there anything you can add for the committee to just help understand the background of that?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, this is exactly directly connected to the issue that Senator Bates is making, and that is that with our spring forecast, we are still starting to sort out what that churn really looks like. And by churn, really what it means is the eligibility from one category to another. They may not necessarily drop off the Oregon Health Plan, but they may move from pregnant women into, say, adults, you know, the regular adults ACA. With the postponement or the delay in the eligibility and re-enrollments that we've had this last month, I would say that some of our data is less than perfect on that. As the Director Saxton was pointing out, over the next 6 to 9 months, we're hopefully going to be able to sort through that, and we're going to get a much clearer picture of what that churn looks like.
Thank you.
Significant budget issues. This reflects where the system is today. Again, federal funding for ACA adults scales down, and you see the calendar years and the percentage decreases. What we're going to be pairing that up with is, again, the projected enrollment, the projected funding of the system, and do some five-year looks at what that means. Because, again, that's all about, this is where that margin of cost savings in the system comes from, and we need to look at it pretty intensely. But these are the decreases we expect, and we'll be talking to you more about those.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Sorry to keep interrupting. No. I want to clear to the committee that my numbers are correct. In the last quarter of this biennium, we'll be starting to pick up a little bit of this now. Mm-hmm. That's going to have to be blended into this budget. I have a hunch in February we'll have come back with some better caseload numbers and have a better sense of where we're at. We may have to have a significant rebalance at that time, but the numbers we get is what we get. We'll do the best we can with them. Okay. I'm also concerned, and we're asking your agency to start looking at how we match up that 10% with general fund assessments, FACWA settlement, and bring the cost curve down to where we can afford that 10% out there in 2020. There's There's lots of pieces moving through this: caseload, cost, how well the CCOs function, what growth looks like. There's lots of issues there, but we have to be able to handle that 10% out there in 4 or 5 years. I think we can do it,
right?
But we have to be careful, and I think this committee needs to be kept informed of that, if you would, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. We appreciate that. This is the designated state health programs waiver. It gives us the federal match for programs not traditionally funded by Medicaid, allows more state funds to be reinvested. The $1.9 billion is spread over the 5 years of the waiver, and then there's $376 million in the 2015-17 governor's budget. We have to continue to meet that growth reduction target and improve on quality and access. Test measures to retain funding. That's the box that we operate in. And that is a significant challenge. I'm just going to put it as simply as I can. And I think it requires, I want to be sure that when we look at that challenge, we look at ourselves as well, because even though the kind of agency cost relative to health service cost is small, we have to continually look at the agency itself and how we can be lean and efficient. In the coming year, in the remainder of 2015, we will be using some of our team that have lean engineering training to look at our processes, to look at our organization, and to ensure that we're using everything as an agency to demonstrate effective and efficient processes in alignment with the service delivery system. It's a really critical piece of how we make this box fit, or how we fit in the box. Anything we need to touch on specifically here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the point on this particular slide is to just simply point out there are significant portions of the OHA budget that are dependent upon the other fund revenues. Of course, you're already dealing with the hospital assessment tax, and for the 15-17 budget that the governor's presented, it's basically including over $1 billion in revenue from that source.
This is the Oregon Health Plan General Fund history.
And members of the committee, this slide, again, is just to demonstrate where we were probably 5-6 years ago with the economic downturn, where there was a pretty significant cut to the Oregon Health Plan and services had to be curtailed. It was with the reintroduction of the DSHP waiver and other alternative revenue sources that we were able to start bringing up the Oregon Health Plan spending.
For the committee, will you please define DSHP?
Madam Chair.
Some of us are new on
that. Thank you, Madam Chair. DSHP stands for the Designated State Health Programs. And as Director Saxton was showing on the earlier slide, this is the $1.9 billion arrangement that the governor made with the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services in order for us to leverage what would be traditionally non-Medicaid dollars. Thank you. And in the last two biennium for the 15-17 and 13-15 and 15-17 governor's budget, this simply demonstrates the additional dollars that were moved into the medical assistance program from addictions and mental health. That's what the little orange slice is on the top.
Okay. Risks and concerns. Again, federal policy plays a major role here, and we monitor that closely, and actually will continue to work with our congressional delegation to continue to work with you and with our partners at CMS to move forward. There is a lot of interest in what Oregon is doing. There is a lot of, we're asked a lot to explain how we've accomplished certain things and how the gains have been made. side. So we're going to be continuing to communicate extensively with our federal partners to ensure they understand what we're doing and also that we benefit from progress and advances that are being made in other states to help us with our second challenge here, which is the financially sustainable model. Obviously, it's important to point out that the economy in Oregon has a critical role here in terms of Medicaid eligibility. And so we're tracking, when we put all the variables together, one of the things we'll be doing is tracking to the economic projections for the state of Oregon. Achieving health systems transformation. I know many of you have talked to me already about concerns about the integration of the mental health system with the physical health system, achieving real results for people with mental health challenges, getting them into the community, and being sure that the service delivery system is delivering 21st century mental health solutions. And we have a sharp focus on that. The ongoing mechanics of enrollment continue to be, I believe the term of art is clunky, and part of the way we get better information out of the enrollment process is to make the enrollment process less clunky. I'll stop there if there's a question.
Okay. Really quick. One of the issues that I've heard from some of the CCOs is that apparently there's federal law that says that CCOs can't even help their own members re-enroll in that CCO. You may not know the answer to this yet, but that's my understanding, and there's some thought about whether we need a statutory thing to ask you to ask CMS for a waiver on that, because the way our CCOs are set up, with exception of a few small areas of the state, we don't really even have overlapping CCOs, so it's not as if people have a choice of which one they're going to enroll in. And as long as they're not trying to as long as they're only taking their own members and trying to help them re-enroll in the same CCO, even in areas where they overlap, I'm a little puzzled as to why we should prevent that, and it might minimize some of the clunkiness, especially since things will change when we roll over into the Kentucky system. Mm-hmm. So if you could give us some thoughts on that, that would be helpful.
Thank you. I'll look
Thank
into
you.
That.
Chair.
Yes.
When you look at that, be sure to look at the federal regulations on this. They are very tight about giving people choice. And that means fee-for-service organizations. And they're really, really tough on that. And we've had some really bad fights over whether you can advertise for a CCO, whether you can't advertise for a CCO, what's advertising.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that in the Medicaid program, people are actually fighting over patients. That doesn't happen a lot of places, okay? The other thing, too, is no wrong door. A decision was made a year and a half, 2 years ago, that DHS workers couldn't enroll people into the Medicaid program. I strongly oppose that. I was outvoted by your predecessor, and I still think that was something that we need to revisit. They can't go to the screen to open it up, and if the DHS workers across the state can enroll Medicaid people, I think it'd be something that would really solve some of these issues. However, they have to have the right tools, the right training. It's different now than it used to be. There's 4,000 or 5,000 people out there that need to be retrained. They want to do it, but they have to have a screen they can work on it and be able to do eligibility. They're doing eligibility for everything else, but not for MAP. So it's something I hope you look at with Aaron.
Yes.
You probably are already.
Yes. We are and we will. I think one of the other things that we're looking at, which is exciting, is and again, we'll be getting back to you on this, but the Robert Woods Johnson Foundation and I believe it's the the Bezos Foundation, have both done some research on the Medicaid population and people living in poverty's access to technology. And the good news is that there's a very high level of access to technology, and part of what we want to think about as we go forward is using those kinds of solutions for enrollment and engagement so that we're moving forward with best practice and the tools we can have.
Thanks for reminding me to turn my cell phone off.
There you go. The other thing I want to talk about briefly is what we're calling the March to Kentucky. Many of you have heard about the Kentucky system that we are adopting or hoping to adopt. We are going to begin this month the team, we have identified a team of people who will be working on getting us successfully converted, and there's a couple parameters there that we've set. First, we have to keep it simple. We cannot build an elaborate, complex system. The reason Kentucky's system worked so well is they had a highly disciplined process, and we will have a highly disciplined process. Also, we will be communicating out to our partners so there are no surprises about where we are in the implementation of the Kentucky system. The concern is, of course, that lots of people depend on the system in many regards, and we want them to know every step of the way where we are and engage them and get their experience with the system before it goes live so that we can work on making sure that it works for everyone, including CCOs, including enrollees, including our team. And that's a big piece of work. I just want to underscore this is not particularly exciting stuff, but it is the foundation of a functional healthcare system, and we're going to be spending a lot of time on this to get it right. And finally, one of the concerns and risks that we have to evaluate and we'll be forecasting and thinking about is expensive treatment advances. We all know there's new hepatitis drugs coming on the market, and we have to factor those in. We're looking at, we're working with the CCOs on our transplant strategy and how can that be done most effectively, most efficiently. There's some big ticket items in the mix here that, that really have to be factored into financial sustainability. This is my favorite slide. This is our progress, and we have much to achieve in the future, but I think these are key points for your consideration today. Currently, we have divisions and programs sometimes with separate missions and visions. In a large agency of this size, it's very easy to have people move away from the center and the coherent core of what our mission is and what we have to accomplish. In our restructure, we're going to bring people back into the focus of the Oregon Health Authority and one mission, one vision, and measurable results. You're going to see it. I'm hoping you'll notice a difference in the results presented to you of what we do through our Ways and Means presentations. We're going to be making continuous progress towards a results-focused culture at OHA.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Winters.
I just have to make a statement because it's so, so refreshing. And I came into this building from the old school. And thank you, Lynn, because I know that, you know, and I sat here and I'm listening to your presentation. For one who just joined about 5 weeks ago, one would not know that it's only been 5 weeks that you have been here. And I need to say that I compliment you, but more than anything, when I saw this, where we've been and where we're going, of grant-oriented to outcomes-oriented is probably the most refreshing that I've seen, and I wish all the agencies, and I hope they're listening, because there was a time in this building when Ways and Means and those who sat here where we're sitting, the focus was what's in the best interest and outcome for the state of Oregon, not what grant that we're getting from the federal government. And I really want to applaud you. This is one legislator who I think you're right on, and I'm just encouraged by it all. So thank you.
Thank you. I think one of the things I'd just like to share is the excitement at the agency to be focusing on both results and outcomes. So the agency has been wanting to go in this direction. Again, we have this gold mine in the metrics data we've already compiled, and we're going to build on that strength. Obviously, it's important to be customer focused. We have a huge technology responsibility. I have a team of people in the industry and in the service areas that I talk to on a regular basis, and I can't tell you how many hours we've already spent on structuring the technology piece differently, on tying the technology piece very tightly to our business delivery system. And again, that's the stuff that makes your eyes roll back in your head. But we're committed to it, and we're going to produce what we need to produce to be successful. We're looking for staff that are empowered to lead. Candidly, one of the first things that surprised me in my work at the agency is I would ask people, what do you think? And they would look at me and say, me? And I would say, yes, because you are an expert in your subject matter. You clearly have a recommendation. It may not be a recommendation that policymakers want to adopt, but we're going to be about data. We're going to be about science. And we're not going to pull our punches. If people choose to make other policy decisions, obviously that's the critical role that you play. But we are going to bring you the science, the best practice, and the data, and that will be the basis of our of the content matter we bring forward. We have been very crisis-driven. It's very palpable in the agency to walk through. I've now walked through all the divisions. I have one left. But I have been through all the divisions, the state hospitals, and across the board, I think you see people who've been through a very difficult time for the last several years. And we're going to move from reactive and defensive, if you will, to proactive, innovative, and responsive. And again, that's why these first early wins are critical, because once people see they can do it, they get excited, and that moves the culture in that direction. It doesn't happen without intent and focus, and we have people specifically identified in the agency who are going to continue to bring that that kind of focus forward as we progress. The government services operating in relative isolation, one of the things that is exciting to me, having been in the provider community and working horizontally across agencies, I worked across five agencies in my provider role, we are bringing that culture forward to the Oregon Health Authority. So we are currently working with, of course, DHS. We have a very close partnership. But in the past few weeks, we've worked with DEQ on some issues. We've worked with higher ed on some issues. Our goal is to deliver results for Oregonians, and sometimes that means, whether it's in public health or in other sectors, we have to reach out to our peer agencies and say, how can we do this well together? And that's been exciting work, and we look forward to being a collaborative partner both internally and also externally with the CCOs, the community organizations, and the advocacy organizations that we work with every day. So now that the CCOs are operational, we're very focused on implementation. When I've been talking to people, one of the things I've talked a lot about is being boring in our excellence of implementation. We need to be both the analysts. The analytical side of this work is dense and intense, but we also need to be the people who can implement a system that is effective. So we'll be looking at structural improvements based on the results gained already and also the results we need to attain in the future. It is critical that we have regulatory clarity. We are going to restructure so that our regulatory function is single door access. And so it has a lot of clarity for the people participating in that regulations, whether it's licensing of facilities or compliance regulation or rate regulation. We want to be clear and effective. I've already talked about the AMH and MAP services alignment. I've talked about the mental health challenge and, of course, the ongoing challenge to integrate service. That is the part of this engine that delivers the goods. You know, we have to one of the CCOs said to me last week, when are we going to get to the air conditioner? When are we going to get to where we can get the air conditioner in place that saves us the money? And I think we're on the path to do that, but we won't get there by hoping it happens. We're going to have to go look under the hood and really engineer the system to deliver that kind of result.
Ms. Saxton,
yes.
The slide that you just completed did include a reference to the new CCO model. To what extent does your agency facilitate a sort of a consortium or coming together of the CCOs on occasion so that you provide an opportunity for them to share best practices or ruminate about changes that they're seeing in the field and how they're dealing with it, and to provide a venue for conversation between them as a group, mm-hmm. not necessarily that they've come together with a common request of you, but a place where they can discuss something that some of them may have in common and share with you, and then you can speak to them as a group of like organizations? Or is it really just they're on their own and you deal with them one at a time?
That's an excellent question. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. There are two things that I'd like to highlight here. One is that the Transformation Center has a learning collaborative process where we bring in, for example, best practice clinical solutions with all the CCOs. We actually have a fellows program in our Transformation Center where we graduated last year key members of their staff who had gone through clinical training with a team from OHSU. So we set up learning collaboratives to bring that transformation piece forward. And we also have innovator agents that are tasked with working intensely with the CCOs to make sure that we're accomplishing healthcare transformation. I think if I were to give ourselves a letter grade on this area of working with the CCOs, right now I would give us a good solid B, and I think Bs are good. I think our goal is an A. And I think with the restructure of the agency, we will have the opportunity to have that relationship be an A. Right now, the relationship with the CCOs is spread across 5 divisions of the Oregon Health Authority, so they have to come through a lot of doors. They get to engage with a lot of people. And we're going to streamline that so that we can both be a collaborative partner on system change, but also so that they will feel that we are an effective partner on the administrative tasks that are intense in healthcare delivery. I think we have a long way to go to get to. I think some of them would give us a C or a D on some of our administrative things. So we have identified our weaknesses in those areas. We've identified our strengths, and we've modeled our restructure on addressing those. So we have more work to do, but good work already done. We do always want to underscore there is not a rainy day fund or reserve funding for healthcare, and that's why the financial sustainability model is so critical to us. Finally, in conclusion, I think this number's transposed. It should be 98% of the budget.
It was 89 earlier.
It was 89
earlier.
I've
transposed
it.
But actually, it said 89.
Thank you. Again, we'll be working with PEB and OEB this year. The state-funded health care programs exist, are part of what makes this system work, and we're excited about doing that. And again, we're structuring for success in that relationship. Those are unique relationships. PEB and OEB have their own boards, and in our restructure, we're going to hopefully make that collaboration stronger and more effective. The budget and our operating plan is, again, very focused on measurable results and accountability for quality care, financial sustainability, and better health for all Oregonians. As I was driving here this morning, I was thinking about that better health for Oregonians and our tobacco challenge, and I think part of what I'm excited about doing in addition to the very strong implementation piece, is looking at our opportunities from using our metrics, our data, and public health grants and funding to improve the communication for Oregonians around how to take ownership of their health and responsibility for their health. I think there are some opportunities there once we get our core operations down that we really need to explore, because, of course, that responsibility is key to making the financial sustainability work.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Senator Winters. I have a request.
Yes.
As you begin to do the realignment and collaboration models as it relate to alcohol, addiction, mental health, and some of those services, last night the good Senator Bates and I had the opportunity to meet with my sheriff, Jason Myers, and our district attorney here, because, you know, you can't talk anymore about mental health without talking about the issue of crisis intervention and the utilization of jails and others. And so we spent some time talking about the model that's being done here in Marion County, and we would like, you know, to invite you along with us and others to begin looking at that model and seeing how we can replicate what we're doing. You know, we recognize that not all counties are where we are here, but certainly the outcomes suggest that we should be actually focusing on how we do a better job in crisis intervention and utilizing mental health expertise as well as alcohol. So I know that Senator Bates will probably chime in for more, but we would actually like to begin to focus on some of those innovative ways of addressing what we all, and I know that Representative Olson, who's also worked in this arena, that it's a big interest. We can't separate Department of Corrections and some of the public safety issues from what we do here on the health side and mental health and alcohol and drug issues. So, and you can take it from there, Senator Bates.
Well, thank you. Let other people speak first, though. Because I'd like to bring a few things forward if we could. We've actually, I think, institutionalized now CCOs. I think people accept them, understand them, and are working with them. And I believe on the physical side, they've done a great job, probably showing a reduction in costs and better outcomes across the board. We'll see. You'll have numbers for us later about that. We always knew that drug and alcohol and mental health were going to be the biggest challenge to doing this. The other challenges are big enough. With IT problems, the rest of those are big enough. But the other three pieces here, alcohol, drug addiction, mental health, are going to be even bigger as far as getting the job done. Mm-hmm. We also know that the social determinants of health are a lot bigger than we thought they were. Mm-hmm. This population may be driving up to 50% of our costs in health care, if you look at it from that point of view. I also came in here 4 weeks ago thinking that we needed to do an overhaul of the system, getting something broadly done statewide. I've had the opportunity now to look at four or five different areas of the state which are moving so fast in front of us that we need to sort of run to catch up to them. One is Marion County. They've focused on their public safety side of it and have cut down the number of people going to jail, cut down the number of people going to state hospital. We haven't got the exact figures yet, but it's pretty dramatic, probably 20-30%. When you understand that the cost of that about a year at the state hospital is somewhere north of $250,000, no federal match to it. We have to think about those things as we go forward. The Tri-County area is working very hard to produce their own system. They're probably a year and a half away. Douglas County wants to step up and do the same thing. They've turned actually their mental health program back to the state. And Deschutes County wants to move forward too. I think what's going to happen here is our job is going to be through you making sure the money flows in the direction of those counties and those organizations that are moving forward the integration of mental health, drug and alcohol with public safety and the CCOs as equal partners and through your organization. I'm not convinced at this point we need any new legislation. These people have moved forward without us because they saw the need and took care of it. So I've kind of changed my position the last 4 or 5 weeks. I don't know if others feel that way or not. But sometimes, you know, we need to get out of their way. and support what they're doing. And I'm looking forward to finding out more of what's going on happening at the county and other levels of government taking care of this. At 3 o'clock next Tuesday, the Marin County Sheriff is going to present to the judiciary in the House what the program looks like. We're going to try to work out something that others can attend that.
Great.
And if possible, even present here. I think it's a really outstanding, rather surprising program. But they've been at it for 10 or 15 years. They just didn't do this last 18 months. So that kind of information needs to come forward to this committee, to mental health committees, to public, to the policy committees. Somehow we've got to bring us all together. But since we control the purse string, I think that's a pretty powerful tool to move people in the right direction.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go home now. I'll see you back in 5 months.
Yeah.
Along those lines, Senator Bates has mentioned a couple of three areas in the state, at least, that are doing some creative things. I wonder if you could help us by asking your staff to prepare a list. It probably won't be exhaustive, but a list of programs or services that OHA has funded or been at least one of the partners in funding to reduce the prison population and reduce emergency department visits, things that relate specifically to addictions and mental health. I can think of one very tiny program that received a very tiny grant from your agency, but it was enough to get them started and demonstrate what could happen. It was transforming something that was simply a sobering center. You stay there a few hours and then you leave, and their point was, that's not doing much good. That's part of the cycle, repeating the cycle over and over.
Right.
And they changed it into something else. There must be programs all over OHA that are addressing this in little pieces. I'd like to have to see the array of different programs, and we might spot a pattern there.
Mm-hmm.
Why are these things funded in a sort of scattershot manner, one at a time? Is there a way to say, hey, we've got some good results going on, and do it in a more orchestrated, intentional manner? So thank you for raising that, Senator Bates.
You're welcome. Thanks for the support.
Chair Nathanson, we will prepare a grid for you showing those programs, the people serve, the geographic region of the state, the ROI. One of the things I want to underscore is we're spending time in the agency looking intensely at client-level outcomes, not just process outcomes. So that's a tough shift to make from counting how many people serve to determining how many people were successful in their recovery, for example. So we're on an evolutionary path there, and we'll provide you a grid sheet that will show those programs and where they are on that spectrum. Literally everything we are driving at in the agency that is contemporary is evidence-based, supported by research. But we have gains to make in terms of really determining the effectiveness of interventions at the client level, which is, of course, what really matters.
Great. Thank you. And one last request I have that Ms. Ames will help make happen for tomorrow. When we were on slide 20, I asked about churning. Most of the information we have is about how we respond and how we respond to the fact that churning exists, how it affects forecasting, how it affects budgeting. My question, though, the second part of it was, how can we impact churning? How can we reduce it? And there are ways that we have addressed it in the past where we have changed policy that helped reduce the degree of churning. And I think Ms. Ames can work with the people who will be presenting to us tomorrow to give us examples of what we can do that actually reduces the degree of churning, therefore increasing at least a little bit the level of confidence we have in our forecasting, mm-hmm. help us get a little more control over our budgeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there additional questions, comments before tomorrow? Okay. Ms. Saxton, thank you for your presentation. We're ready to move now to Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee. I appreciate your time.
Good morning. Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson and Bates and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kate Nass with today from the Department of Administrative Services Chief Financial Office. As Director Saxton mentioned, I have officially taken a position over at Health Authority, so I am helping see the governor's budget through this process, and then I will be over there. So just in full disclosure. As previously, healthcare costs were unsustainable, and health system transformation was well underway by the time we started working on the governor's budget. But the governor's budget really emphasized a continuation of this work. So this included ensuring access that people were covered with health coverage, as Director Saxton mentioned, we're already at 95%, but we want to keep that. Expand access to the coordinated care model, all while maintaining financial stability, especially in the fact that we're losing other funds. Either the hospital provider assessment was going away, the designated state health program increased federal match steps down, all sorts of things. So we wanted to, that financial stability was really important. Additionally, there was a significant investment in community mental health programs in the last or current biennium budget. We did not want to undercut that. So as that's getting up and people are starting to rely on that capacity, we did not want to then have to immediately turn around and reduce that. As you know, there is a 10-year plan for the state of Oregon. Health programs mostly tied to healthy people with a vision that in Oregonians enjoy good health and the best quality of life. That's not surprising. The other place that I did want to tie this to, which Senator Winters mentioned earlier on, is that it does have a pretty significant tie, especially in the addictions and mental health area of services, to the public safety vision. So this shows the agency's budget from its inception in the 2011-13 biennium. This is total funds. Just for quick context, that the far left is the 2011-13 budget. The next one is the 13-15 current budget. The next one over is the 2015-17 current service level. And then the next one is the governor's budget for next biennium. So if you notice, the green at the bottom is the general fund, and so that grows over from 11-13 to 13-15, and then there's a significant increase into the 15-17 current service level. That's where we had to make some priorities, understand what options were available to us, and we reduced it into the governor's budget. Some of that is because we were able to extend the hospital provider assessment, which you've already heard, the House Bill 2395, but there was also some priorities that we had to make. The yellow and orange are the state's other funded, or the agency's other funded programs. The only difference between that is yellow is limited funding and orange is non-limited funding. And then the top part, the blue, is the our federal partners funding into our health authorities budget. This is similar, the exact same information that Director Saxton mentioned in her donut, that pie chart that she had. So mine's a pie, hers is a donut. Aren't we healthy? And anyhow, so
show us a bran muffin. On
yeah, exactly. I know. We should have done something better.
Yeah.
So the majority of the payments or expenditures for the health authority are payments to CCOs, providers, counties, community mental health partners, local public health departments, whatever. That's the majority of it. A large portion, or not a large, so that's 84%. 11% is the services and supplies for agency operations. Employee costs count for 5%, and then small slivers are debt service and capital outlay, which you may or may not be able to see. If we look at that one more slide differently, I just parsed this up a little bit. For the services and supplies or the operation That, in the traditional budget sense, includes the PEB premium payments. So when you look at the fact that it was, now I can't remember the number, 11% with services and supplies, once you pull out the $1.6 billion of the $2.1 billion for PEB premiums, services and supplies are only 3% of the budget. Additionally, if you look at employee costs and you kind of dive a little bit more into that, half of the agency's employee costs in the governor's budget are to fund employees at the state hospital.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just a really quick question, Ms. Ness. That's a really useful breakdown, and it's really interesting. It's interesting to think about the fact that employee costs, it's sort of circular, which is to say that the agency pays for the premiums for PEB for its employees, which then go into that pot over there, the PEB premium pot. So it's a little hard for me to figure out whether some of that money is being double counted, or if it's even possible to parse that out. And you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if it's that important, but it's an interesting question at some level, especially when I see you break it out like that, which is very helpful.
Yeah. Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Sarah Hayward, you're right. There is a portion of the employee benefit costs of the employees of the health authority funds. Their premiums are considered in the PEB premiums, just as every other state employee's
right.
budget. Budgeted allocation for their costs also goes towards this $1.6 billion of PEB premiums. So, excellent point. We can dive into the details if you want to, but it is circular and it can be double. It does appear to be double counted.
Madam Chair, very quick follow-up, if I may. And then it may turn out to be a relatively small number, but in essence, if you look at it that way, you really need to add sort of a fifth slice to that smaller segment,
yes.
which is agency employee PEB premiums for
right.
both regular employee costs and for the state hospital, which would parse it out a little bit differently. It would cut your employee costs a little bit while leaving the premiums the same, or you could add a fifth slice or however you wanted to do it. But in essence, it really actually brings that total percentage down a chunk.
Right.
No. I don't know how big a chunk, though. I mean, I could guess, but...
As could I right now. But,
I
won't.
I don't think guesses are useful to any of us. So I'm kind of curious. It may turn out to be a totally de minimis amount, but I'm curious.
I can do that for
Thank
sure.
Thank you.
So this is another total fund budget by the structure that Director Saxton mentioned earlier, where we have healthcare programs accounting for 89%. And to the earlier discussion of 98% versus 89%, if you add everything up except for the agency support, that is 98%. So if you do all of the healthcare programs plus the addiction and mental health and plus the public health costs associated with it, that is the 98%. So I think both were right, in my opinion. And then this takes that green slice and divides it out to show the health programs by major funding programs, so medical assistance programs, which is primarily the Oregon Health Plan, PEB, OEB, and then the health policy programs, and then other health care, which is primarily the reinsurance pool. And the remainder of the claims on that. Last pie chart, I promise. This is the total funds budget by program in the same structure that we just talked about, and then also the general fund lottery fund. If you notice, it's a very different picture. Our federal partners, our other state partners help fund a lot of our healthcare programs. So the healthcare programs account for 89% when you're looking at the total fund budget and 56% when you're looking at the general fund lottery fund budget. All right, I'll try to go through this quickly. It's a lot of words. The governor's budget prioritized to the continuation of health system transformation that was already underway. That includes capping the Medicaid cost and the health plan, expanding the current the coordinated care model. It continues the current hospital provider assessment as we have in House Bill 2395 that you've all voted on and moved forward. The Public Employees Benefit Board continues to be capped at the same health system transformation per employee per month or per employee per year growth. It also begins the limiting of the Oregon Education Benefit Board's cost growth as well. So it moves that from a non-limited budget to a limited budget. It makes a small investment in the Patient Safety Commission to improve patient and provider interactions. It added and invests in the Medicaid fee-for-service portion of to pay for services that Medicaid-eligible clients that are on fee-for-service receive services at a new psychiatric emergency department. And then lastly, I do want to mention two other investments that were smaller and couldn't fit on the slide, but are related to health system transformation. One is the Transformation Center and Oregon Health Policy and Research. Their grants are going away. The governor's budget continues that, knowing how much that work means to health supporting the health programs in the agency. And also a package that's called RealD. You may have heard about it through DHS. It's the getting equity data within the systems and being able to track that health disparities across both DHS and OHA.
Can I just say
yes?
That last point is actually a bill that we passed, so it's not something that you're actually at liberty to do or not do. So I just want to make that comment. And also a quick question. What is the Transformation Center budget? Approximately.
So I have the total. Sorry. Chair Nathanson, Representative King, I'd happy to get back to you on just
fine.
The Transformation Center. I have the overall for the health policy programs in front of me, so
okay.
I'll get back to you.
I would just add as well that we'll be making some structural changes in the Transformation Center, which may change going forward its budget allocations and its costs.
Okay, thank you.
And in the mental health system, the governor's budget adds $53 million to the community mental health programs from where they're currently funded. This is on top of the continued commitment to integrate the behavioral health services into the Oregon Health Plan, as Director Saxton mentioned earlier. The budget prioritizes and preserves the support of the recent community mental health capacity building through the 15-17 biennium, knowing that we didn't want to, again, undercut that. And funds an agency-proposed package to evaluate and treat certain aid and assist patients in communities rather than in the state hospital. So these are people who have been found unable to aid and assist in their defense, and so they have unfortunately hit the criminal justice system and are getting mental health services that way. And lastly, it continues the phase-in of the state hospital, but this was we had to prioritize, so unfortunately it's not at full capacity, but it continues the phase-in of Junction City. Within public health, given the recent attention to public health crisis and issues, it makes an investment in preparedness and planning efforts for local public health agencies, departments. So public health is working on that. It also makes a small investment into the next steps for the future of public health. The task force recommendations to see where that goes, and makes a small investment to continue that work forward. And lastly, it supports fee increases for certain programs in the public health division, knowing that fees have not been dealt with in public health for a while, and so there's some analysis going on of the fiscal sustainability of those programs throughout the 15-17 biennium. So there could be more to come on that. And with that, I talked really fast.
And on the topic of fees, it's come up in not only in this subcommittee, but other subcommittees that I've worked with. I'd appreciate it if you could give some thought to whether you could provide us a table that shows the various fees, when the last time was they were increased, so we'll see how many years it's been, and if there's a way to approach this more rationally, such as a more routine updating of fees but still with a legislative check as needed. We don't want to see fees increase when there's not a reason to, but a more rational way than waiting 20 years for one and 30 years for another, but only six for this one. It just, and then it gets awkward to explain why you're doubling a fee instead of a smaller increase.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, that table that you just referenced is exactly what we have our public health fiscal analysts working on as we speak.
Thank you. There's nothing else for
along with that discussion, could you at least have a discussion about indexing it?
Yeah.
Just indexing it.
Yeah.
With oversight.
A routine indexing, meaning increasing, just like other things are indexed and increase as inflation increases. Just as an option to consider for how it could be addressed over time.
So, yes, and I want to underscore that we will have the data for the public health department. We are also beginning a look in the mental health sector and in the CCO rate sector about both kind of the indexing requirement and the regular review of rates and fees across the board, including identification of segments in the service sector that receive other subsidies from the state as part of their fees.
Great. Thank you for looking at this in a more comprehensive way and not just in this one little silo. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Ms. Sachs, can I ask you a really quick question? Can I ask you a really quick question?